Welcome to the Undisputed Podcast. I'm your host, Jenny Taft. This podcast is a condensed version of today's episode of Undisputed, handpicked with the best segments and discussions. Skip, Shannon, let's go.
Well, last season, Jameis Winston had more deep completions, passes of 20-plus yards, than any other QB in the league. Tom Brady was the 12th best in that category. So, Shannon, this begs the question, with Brady now the starter in Tampa, will Bruce Arians' offense be a good or bad thing for Tom Brady?
Skip, on one hand, it looks like a good fit for the simple fact you look at all the weapons. Godwin, Mike Evans, O.J. Howard, now he signed Gronk, Cameron Brait. They took a running back, I think, if I'm not mistaken, Skip, in the second or third round, drafted an offensive lineman with the first, the 10th pick in the draft. Well, high in the draft. So it looks like a good fit because of the weapons. But when you delve inside of it, it's really not a good fit because in that offense, Skip, it's all about pushing the ball down the field. And you know this. When you push the ball down the field, you subject yourself to more turnovers. This is why Jameis made some horrible mistakes. All of those turnovers weren't on long passes. He had some horrible read, Skip, on some underneath stuff. And even on the deep balls, he threw into traffic a lot. But this is what this offense requires you to do. Skip, for the most part, Tom Brady's 20-year career, except with that three-year span, in 1 year, remember, Skip, he only played one game with Randy. If I'm not mistaken, Skip, in 08, he only played one game. He got hurt early in that game. And so basically it was 7 and 9 in which he played with Randy Moss. That was really the only time the Patriots offense was deep strike, pushed the ball down the field because you had Randy Moss. Other than that, Tom Brady has been very risk averse. This is why his running backs catch so many passes. That's why the screen game is so good for them. It's something that they really work on. And if you think about it, you're going to have to ask Tom Brady to retrain what he's been trained to do, which is risk aversion. That means you're going to have to stand in the pocket a little longer. You're going to have to allow guys to get a little closer to you. And you're going to have to push the ball down the field. And you're going to have to trust Godwin. You're going to have to trust Godwin and Mike Evans, that they're going to make plays. And either they're going to make the play or they're going to break the play up and the defense is not going to make a play. All right, so Skip, it looks great because you look at the weapons and Brady as a whole maybe not have ever had offensive weapons like this at one particular time. Now, Skip, we know what Gronk represented. We know Wes Welker, what he represented, and we ran him off. But when you combine all this, I don't know if you've ever had this, but when you really, really look at it, Skip, Tom Brady's going to be asked to stand in the pocket, take 7-step drops, hold the ball, and push it down the field. So they're going to be asking Tom Brady to do things in which he hasn't done in a very long time. Whether or not it's going to work, we're going to have to see. But it's asking him to do something that he really hasn't done, or I don't know if he's really comfortable doing, especially at the age of 43. Skip, licks hurt a little more as we start to age. Trust me.
Trust me. So, back to your premise that Tom Brady at 43 might not have the arm or the guts or the durability to be able to take an offense in which go routes are called every other play. I believe that whole narrative is fallacious. I believe it's just, as Bruce Arians said, flat out wrong. Arians said a couple days after they were able to sign Tom Brady that, "I think the perception is just wrong. I thought his deep ball was outstanding last year." And Shannon, I got to tell you, the stats back that up. Would you believe that Tom Brady threw 7 touchdown passes of 20 or more yards last year? That was his most since 2006. And back to Jameis, who was in that bombs away offense last year and put up absurd numbers, great and bad. Jameis was number one in tight window completions of 20 or more yards. Guess who was tied for first with Jameis for tight window completions of more than 20 yards? Thomas Edward Patrick Brady Jr. That guy did that last year with nobody to throw to in New England. Tom Brady tied Jameis for the most guarded deep ball throws in the league. And by the way, as Pro Football Focus pointed out in grading Brady from last year, his passing suffered for lack of quality receivers in 2019. Brady's numbers were solid with nobody getting open on a consistent basis. I told you Pro Football Focus graded the Patriots receivers as dead last in separation, in being able to get free from a DB or a linebacker or anybody covering them. So to me, it's just erroneous to think Tom Brady can't stand up to this offense. And by the way, Bruce Arians knows how it works because he went on to say that we do have some reads that start deep and come back short. But I've had a couple of quarterbacks, one of them obviously being Jameis, that just kept looking deep and wouldn't throw the check down. And he loves, Bruce Arians, what Tom Moore, his great advisor who coached Peyton Manning in his early years in Indy, Tom Moore's always said that nobody ever went broke putting money in the bank. Well, they didn't, because it's check downs. Take it, if it's somebody's open short, just dump it to them. So now Tom Brady goes to an offense that has obviously the prince of midair in Evans, Mike Evans, who's 6 feet, five mm-hmm. inches tall. And Pro Football Focus ranked Chris Godwin last year the number one receiver in football. So now you've got those two on the outside. You added Gronk, who has the best rapport of anybody, I think even beyond Edelman, that Brady threw to in New England. And you also have O.J. Howard, who's an untapped resource. He still hasn't figured out how to play. He's 6'5", mm-hmm. and he ran 4.5 at the combine. My goodness. What do you think's going to happen? Greatness is going to happen because there's nothing wrong with Brady's arm. They had another workout yesterday. They said they probably had 10 or 12 in Tampa. Hope they're social distancing. But they say his arm looks as good as ever. It looks live. So to me, I don't see that this whole storyline that he can't stand up to the offense. Yeah, he can. And sometimes he's going to throw some short balls that are going to be run after catch balls.
Yeah, Skip, I believe that. But if that's when it came off, Skip, that's not what I meant. I'm not saying Tom Brady can't. I'm saying Tom Brady's going to be asked to throw the ball down the field more than at any point in time in his career. This is the offense. And yes, Skip, in every offense, you throw the ball deep occasionally. But nobody asked their quarterback to throw the ball deep more than what Tampa asked Jameis to do. And when you do that, Skip, you allow the defense to get closer. Tom has done a great job, Skip. You remember when I think it was Joey Bosa that was mic'd up in that divisional game. And he's like, man, I can't get there, because Tom was just throwing the ball. He was getting the ball out of his hands so quick. Well, that's not Tampa's offense. Tampa is about pushing the ball down the field. It's about getting those big plays. It's about getting those plays, as John Gruden used to say, that gut you. You know, the screen pass, yeah, it's frustrating, Skip. The little swing, a little shallow, yeah. But there's nothing gets the crowd in the game like a 50, 60-yard touchdown pass. And that's what Bruce Arians' offense is predicated on. And this is why normally in their first year, their quarterback, with the exception of Big Ben, Skip, remember, Big Ben, when he got Big Ben, the Steelers were a Jerome Bettis, Willie Parker, run the football, play defense. Ben, we're going to let you throw it on third down. Well, all the other quarterbacks, Peyton Manning, Skip, he led the league in interception. But Peyton put everything on Peyton's plate. You look at Carson Palmer, they put everything on his plate when he had him in Arizona. So and Andrew Luck, Skip, we know Andrew Luck was a turnover machine, because you got to hold the ball, you take a lot of blows, but you also get an opportunity to reap the reward. And so, Skip, as you mentioned, like, you never lose money putting money in the bank. Well, and if you want big money, you got to invest in riskier stocks. You know, people that really made it big, Skip, they invested in Google. They invested in Apple. They invested in those stocks. They're like, I don't know about this. Man, you mean to tell me the internet's going to be big in 2000 and in 2010 and people going to really need a search engine? Nah, I don't know about that. Those guys made more money than putting their money in Wells Fargo and Wycovia. Well, Wells Fargo bought Wycovia, but you know what I mean, Skip. You know, you're getting 3% of your money as opposed to investing in riskier stocks and getting 15-20 risk reward. So there's a huge reward on the end of that, but there's a ton of risk in that style of play also. That's what I'm saying, Skip. Yes, I believe Tom can throw the ball down the field, but are you going to ask him to do that like you asked Jameis on the amount of times that you asked Jameis, and can he stand in there? Jameis took some blows, Skip. You know to push the ball down the field. You got to take a few to the chops.
Okay, so here's what stunned me about the Pro Football Focus ranking of the deep throwers from last year. Jameis led across the board in five categories, but Jameis fell all the way down to 12th in the rank. Is it 12th or 13th? 12th, I believe it was. But Jameis fell way down the list because he was so bad with the turnovers. He had so many negative statistics that undercut the positive.
Yes.
So, Shannon, he turned it over 35 times last year. 30 interceptions, 5 lost fumbles. Tom Brady turned it over 9 times with a bad offense in New England. 8 interceptions and 1 lost fumble. Okay, 35 down to 9? What if Brady just turns it over a dozen times? What if you cut it down by 23 turnovers? It's so much better that your offense is going to be twice as good. It'll be twice as effective. And you brought this up, and I know some of the Tampa reporters have already written about this and talked about it on ESPN. Brady is the master of the screen pass. I don't think anybody has ever set up and thrown the screen any better than Tom Brady. For whatever reason, Jameis couldn't get a hold of throwing screen passes. It was not his forte. He didn't have the feel or the touch for the short ball. He could really throw the deep ball, especially if you gave him just one more second in the pocket. He could kill you with the deep ball, but he didn't throw the screen. So they abandoned the screen.
Right.
Watch Tom Brady. I kept telling you, my little man from Vanderbilt, Keyshawn Vaughn, they stole him in the third round. He can flat out ball. He can catch it out of the backfield. He's short and stout and quick and hard to get on the ground. Well, watch what he does with screen passes next year. That's a whole nother part of the repertoire that Bruce Arians and Tom Moore have at their fingertips. And in the end, Shannon, they know this is the GOAT, man. They're going to welcome and honor his input into their offense.
Absolutely.
So you're going to see a blend of Brady and Arians. Brady and Arians. He does this. They like to do this. The twain shall meet. And obviously in 2007, Tom Brady threw 50 touchdown passes, a lot of them to Randy Moss. They broke all the records. So it's not like he's never done this before. He would love to do this if it works. But what he loves more than records are Super Bowls. So I think it's an all-time great fit. I think it's the perfect place for Tom Brady to end his career in Tampa with Bruce Arians. And again, I don't have any trepidation about Tom's ability to throw the deep ball if he's protected. And now they're going to have to protect him and give him the 7-step drop kind of time that you need to throw home runs.
Skip, the screen game is really tied to your feet. And guys, really, you have to have good feet because, Skip, you got to fake one way. A lot of times you fake one way, gather your feet, and throw the ball back the other way. And I'm not so sure that Jameis had the best feet. Now, he was good at dropping. I think he had slow feet, and I think he does a great job of dropping back, throwing the ball down the field. But, Skip, if you look at guys that are good at the screen game, you watch their feet, and you watch how fast their feet. They'll take it, they'll fake one way, and now I got to reset my body and throw the ball up the other way. Now, Tom Brady was great at that because you know why, Skip? That was a part of their offense. It was something that he knew he had to get good at because that was such a big, valuable asset in their game plan. So he became very proficient. Skip, you got to work on screens. I mean, we were okay when I was playing, Skip. We were okay, but we were basically a toss, handoff, strong, weak team and pushed the ball down the field. We weren't as great as we probably should have been. Now, we kept trying to put it into game plan, but we didn't have the success that, say, a Steve Young had with the 49ers. Or Brett ran the screen game really well, Skip. But you look at guys' feet, when they run the screen game, and it'll tell you how successful they're going to be. So you're right. I believe they'll have a measure as well as they should, Skip. The quarterback should be heavily involved because just because you like something, you stand on the sideline calling the plays. I'm out here. I know what's working, and I know what I believe that will work best. So I do believe that they'll come together, and it will be a mix. But at the end of the day, Skip, they're going to push the ball down the field, Skip, I believe, a lot more than what Tom Brady is used to.
Good. No mercy.
Well, Dak Prescott ranked fourth overall in deep passing performance last season, according to Pro Football Focus. And with the addition of CeeDee Lamb, Pro Football Focus said Dak could appear even higher this coming season. So, Shannon, are you surprised?
I was a little surprised, but Michael Gallup was a very good deep threat for Dak Prescott last year. Dak did push the ball down the field. Skip, he got the name Dink and Dak because if you look at his first 2 years, Skip, he was 22nd. And then he went from 22nd, 22nd in 16, 17 to 19th and 18 to third. And that's why Dak wanted his money. Dak said, I've been improving. And y'all trying to give me 2016 and 2017 money. I need 2021 and beyond type money. So, Skip, I was a little surprised because, you know, when you look at it, you don't think because they fell behind so much. And what teams were doing, they were preventing them from getting the big chunk plays. Let them nickel and dime, and that's why at the end of the game, you see Dak have like 25, 30 completions with 400 yards. It was because they were behind, and people was giving you all the underneath things. But I guess when you look down, when you break it all away, his first three games, he was pushing the ball down the field. Michael Gallup had over 1,100 yards. So somebody had to get down the field. So when you look at it, Skip, he's improved. Dak has improved every year. Now, Skip, that might not always go to the record because a lot of times we can see improvement, but the record is not indicative of the improvement that a player has made. Sometimes a record is better, but the player doesn't improve. Dak has gotten better every year from his rookie year to his end of his last year. We know that. And so when you look at this stat, Skip, he's fourth in deep passing performance. That's a huge stat, and that's one of the things that he and Todd Francis sliding on over there to Stephen and Jerry Jones. Take a look at that, fellas.
On your final point, I much agree with you to my chagrin. I'm dreading that. I'm going to get to that in just a moment. I also agree with you. I was a little surprised by this. I know he throws the deep ball pretty well, but his stats ranked him fourth last year. Fourth. And by the way, that's... five notches above Patrick Mahomes down at ninth. Carson Wentz is 10th. Aaron Rodgers, 11th. That's pretty great. So I have two requests. I told you the other day, you can no longer ever wear your goat mask again, except on Halloween, because it's over. Obviously, Jordan is now conclusively proven to be better than LeBron James. So you can wear your goat mask on Halloween, or if you go back to South Georgia to visit the farm that you grew up on. Other than that, now we get to the nickname that you hung on my guy Dak Prescott back in 2016, Dink and Dak. It's a clever nickname, but it no longer works. It is defunct. It is obsolete. It is officially retired because he ranked fourth in the whole league in deep throwing. Okay, now to the line Jenny touched on as she opened this topic up, Pro Football Focus said, with CeeDee Lamb added to the mix this year, Dak Prescott could appear even higher on this list come next season. Yeah, he could. Amari Cooper is still one of the best deep threats in pro football, especially at home, not so much away. As you point out, and you were really the first to market with this, Michael Gallup is emerging as one of the top deep threats in football. And I told you before the draft, CeeDee Lamb is that guy. And he fell into the Cowboys' lap at 17. And I told you the next day, he's going to change life in Dallas. He will emerge ultimately as the best deep threat of the Cowboy receivers, even beyond Amari and Michael Gallup. Now you've got triple jeopardy for defensive coordinators. And don't forget, you still got to account for that 21 lined up back there at running back who can also catch it on swing passes out of the backfield. And Blake Jarwin right. would be a much better deep threat tight end, a get open tight end, than obviously Jason Witten was in his dotage last year, in his last year with the Cowboys. So to your point, now we've seen in recent weeks fourth and deep passing as high as third in MVP odds in the Caesars sports book and third mm-hmm. in Roto World rankings of fantasy projections for next year. Fourth, third, right. third. Well, now to your final point, Todd France, the new agent for Dak Prescott, is going to say, Jerry, I've got numbers here that are saying we're looking at a top five quarterback next year. Yep. We need our money. And yet, mm-hmm. I'm still back to my premise. The reason Dak is being heralded as Dak Prescott, the reason he's getting all this acclaim, is because of his weapons. CeeDee Lamb is going to be the greatest thing that ever happened to Dak, and I thought Amari was a year and a half ago. Amari did change Dak's life. Michael Gallup Absolutely. Is starting to change it. Yeah, CeeDee Lamb will change it. He came in with Zeke, who was the fourth overall pick. That's a pretty sweet deal. And if you look at the offensive line, I know it underachieved last year. And I realize they lost their perennial Pro Bowl center, Travis Fredericks. I got that.
Right.
But if you look across that line, there's still nobody who has turned 30 years of age. So Ty Smith is still 29. Zach Martin is still 29. Obviously, Connor Williams, the left guard, I'm not real high on him, but he's still just a baby, you know, out of the University of Texas, a second-round pick in his third year. Mm-hmm. And then Connor McGovern, 2 years ago, a third-round pick out of Penn State, looks like he might be the starting center. So, again, Lyle Collins, still just 27 years of age. They're not over the hill. It's an offensive line that is still going to be top five next year. Maybe they'll overachieve mm-hmm. next year. Maybe it'll be a new dawn. Maybe they'll have a new vibe to them, something to prove. My point is, Dak Prescott is in what we say. We can't explain what it means. He's in the catbird seat next year. There's different ways to skin the cat, and then there's the catbird seat. I don't know what it means, but we know what it will amount to. Dak is in yep. primo position with the weapons, yep. the offensive line, and Mike McCarthy, I think, is really good at overseeing an offense. Obviously, Kellen Moore is still going to be the play caller, but this is going to be Mike McCarthy's offense. He obviously coached Joe Montana and Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers, and Dak will benefit from Mike McCarthy. So my point is, when it comes to the negotiation that we keep arm wrestling over, that in the end, it's time for Dak to wake up, smell the roses around him, and say, I got to compromise a little bit because I'm in a really good spot here. I do have 12 national TV commercials because I'm the quarterback of America's team, and I do have weaponry and protection that could make our offense, I don't know, could it be as explosive as Mahomes? It could be. Could it be as explosive as what Brady and Arians are going to put on the field in Tampa? It could be. Could it be as explosive as Lamar's offense? Yes, it could be. Shannon, you have to say thank you, football gods, for what you gave me. And with the deal on the table, 36-ish million a year, maybe 110 million guaranteed, it's still very fair market value money for the situation you're in. You have to make it work. You need to get to the virtual OTAs and to training camp. You need to settle with Jerry Jones. You need to come to the middle of the table and compromise and get this done so you can focus on winning a championship next year.
I'm focusing on that. I'm focusing on winning the championship and getting my money. What part about no didn't you understand? The big N or the big O? No, because guess what, Skip? Yeah. There is more stats still coming out that paints me in a favorable position. This had me at fourth, Skip, in deep throw? No, third in deep throw. Man, that's good. What about another stat that come out and say Dak on third down was like number one or number two? No. We still got stats. They're still calculating stats that's going to come out that's going to paint me in a favorable position. Skip, you know how nicknames go. You get to keep them. My sister's about to be 60 years old. She's Libby a Buck. She's never going to be able to get called by her real name, Shara Sharp. That's never going to happen. Check down Alex Smith. He can come back. Skip, he can come back and throw 15 touchdowns of 50 yards or more. He's going to be forever known as Check Down Alex. You know, once you get a nickname and people start referring to you as that nickname, you're not living that down. You're not. You're not going to live it.
Time out.
Anthony McFarland.
I need to know.
Go ahead.
Yeah, wait a second. How do you spell Shara? Is it S-H-E-R-A?
S-H-E-R-R-A. Shara.
Okay. So the siblings were then named Sterling, Shannon, and Cher. I like that. It's got a ring to it. It's a good name.
Yeah, all of and my sister has the middle name. My brother and I, we do not have middle names. So we were the handful of people who do not have middle names. Sterling Sharp, Shannon Sharp. But Skip, you know how this works. You know once you get a nickname, they started calling you Skip. Nobody ever referred to you by your government name. Now, this is your government name.
Never.
But you were Skip. So no matter what, you're Skip now. So you you do, you're Skip.
Okay, but it wasn't a nickname. It was actually, weirdly, the name that my father called my mother while they were courting or dating or whatever you want to call it, because I was the firstborn.
Right.
He always called her, you're the skipper of the ship. You know, whatever you say, we do, because you're the one in control here. And my mother was in control, believe me. But the point was, they named me after my father, John Edward, on the birth certificate. But the moment I was born, they started calling me their little skipper. You know, like it was the same nickname for my mom, weirdly. And it went right to me. Right. So not one day of my life was I ever called John or John Edward. I didn't even know what that meant until I went to school and the teacher calls roll and says, John Edward, you know, I don't even answer. I don't even know that that's my name.
Right.
So again, it wasn't really a nickname. It was my name. It wasn't a derisive nickname like Dink and Dak, or it wasn't a phony nickname like GOAT for LeBron, a fallacious nickname, one that does not apply. So now we have to retire those two because both of them have been rendered officially defunct. Thank you.
I mean, but it has such a nice ring, Dink and Dak. Doesn't that have a nice Check Down Alex?
It's clever.
It's just something about it.
I like it.
Yeah.
Right.
But unfortunately,
it can go up on the wall behind you somewhere. You know, it can go. It's one of your memorabilia, and you hang on to all of your memorabilia. But now it's history.
I can't let it go. I
feel like Skip, you know, I can't imagine you as any other person. Skip Bayless has worked out just fine for you. I feel like that was a good decision.
No mercy.
Time for our hot topic of the day, sponsored by Burger King. 8 spicy chicken nuggets for just $1. Horace Grant refuted Michael Jordan's claim that he was the locker room source for Sam Smith's famous book, The Jordan Rules. Horace went on to say that if anyone was a snitch, it was Jordan for calling out former teammates for doing hard drugs and partying in his early days in Chicago. Skip, this is getting worse and worse. Whose side are you on here?
Yep. Jenny, this is a tough one because I've always liked Horace Grant. Many of the points he's making about this so-called documentary are dead on point. But in the end, I'm still on Michael Jordan's side because he is who he always was. many of the things Shannon doesn't like about Michael Jordan, I love about him because they're all who he is and has been and why he is and has been. Yes, Horace. Yes, Shannon. He holds grudges to a fault. Yes, he carries out vendettas. Yes, he used his Hall of Fame induction speech to get even with and call out every last person who ever crossed him or doubted him. Yes, 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 he did all that. That's why he was psycho-driven to go 6-for-6 in NBA Finals. That's why he drove his teammates relentlessly, mercilessly to try to live up to his greatness when it came playoff time. It's why he tried to toughen all of them up, including Ho Grant. And yet, I can't hold it against Michael because it's just the Michael I knew in 1998 in Chicago. Nothing has changed. Did he hold a grudge against Horace for the book by Sam Smith, The Jordan Rules? Yes. Did he unfairly call out Horace in The Last Dance for being the snitch, the ultimate source for Sam Smith in The Jordan Rules? Yes, he did. Out of bounds, Michael. A lot of people contributed to that book. Assistant yes. coaches, Phil Jackson, Jerry Reinsdorf, any other number of players. Was Horace a primary source for that book? I believe he was because Sam went so far as to, in his acknowledgments at the end of the book, to credit Horace Grant for being so, I forget how it was worded, but for helping so much in the input into the book, for always being there and being accessible for the writers, including and especially Sam Smith. That was the tip off, I believe, for Michael Jordan that, oh, well, most of it came from Horace. So was Michael going to, quote unquote, get even with Horace? Yeah, I think he wanted to call him out. They did interview Horace, but Horace has told Shannon, yeah, but a lot of my answers or a lot of the negatives that I told the producers in my interview got cut out. They got left on the cutting room floor. I don't doubt that at all. This is Michael Jordan you're dealing with, and this was his baby. It took 22 years for him to decide, okay, I'm going to release all this footage. He owned the rights to all that practice footage, and I'm going to unleash it my way. I'm going to sign off. I'm going to have final say on every last glimpse that you see in those 10 hours of television. So everything Horace says is correct, but in the end, I don't think he's going to win this battle. Again, Shannon, he's wanted to come on Undisputed. We need to get back in the studio so he can join us. We're happy to do that, and I would welcome hearing more because I'm sure there's more to the story than he's even told Chicago radio so far and told you on the phone, that some of which you couldn't even talk about. But in the end, I'm still going to side with my guy, Michael Jordan, even though I acknowledge everything Horace said, and I don't believe he was completely out of line in anything that he said.
And Skip, I think the thing is for me is that I'm a firm believer it's never too late to set the record straight. And I believe that Horace wanted to set the record straight because Skip, like you said, there are a lot of people that didn't know about this book, just like there's a lot of people that weren't of age to remember Michael Jordan playing. And so now they get an opportunity to see some of the things that he did early on. It's like, well, oh, but they also remember, oh, man, Horace Grant was a snitch. He's the one that told us that. You know, Sam Smith, all that stuff. And he's like, well, wait a minute. I thought we were done with that. I didn't think that we were going to paint any of our teammates in a negative light. Yes, okay, maybe you rolled some of them to try to get them to rise to the level of play that you thought they could get to. But when you said, oh, Horace Grant was a snitch. Like, Skip, that man's going to refute that. He's not going to let you take a shot, even in the documentary. Although, like he said, there are a lot of things that were said, not just by me, but by others, that if it wasn't heaping praise on Michael, it got cut out. Because, and that's why Skip on the show, he kept calling it the so-called documentary. And if you notice, Skip, documentaries, everything's out. you don't get to have say on what gets in and what gets out. Because more times than not, you're going to let all the good get in and you're going to keep a lot of the bad out. So that's why when people do how do they say it, Skip? It's like the unauthorized autobiography, the unauthorized documentary of such and such as life. Because if we let you have some say, it, more times than not, it's going to be all positive, and we know nobody's life is all positive. Yeah. So Horace wanted, he definitely wanted to get out. That yes, Mike did do that, said no, don't feed him. But I just want everybody to know, Sharp, I said F you, and I stepped towards it, and he didn't move because he wasn't really trying to do anything like that. So for me, Skip, I just think that Horace wanted to set the record straight. He does not want to be viewed as a snitch. I mean, I guess in some circles, snitching is viewed as okay. If you're in that lifestyle, okay, fine, I get it. All of that, I'm not here to refute somebody snitching or trying to save themselves. You do what you want. But if I feel that you're calling me out and I didn't do that, well, Skip, I have no choice but to refute that. And I think this was Horace's opportunity to refute what he believed Michael was saying, which is damaging. Because no, but Skip, no athlete wants to be labeled as a snitch. Oh, you the one that was giving up information. You the one that was telling the media, yada, 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 what happened in the locker room, what happened in meeting room. And nobody wants that title. And Horace wanted to set the record straight. So I'm with Horace. Look, okay. I'm going to defend my name. I'm going to defend myself. But like you said, hopefully in the next 2 weeks, month, we can get back in the studio and we can have guests. And we'd love to have Horace on.
Okay. By the way, you're referring to what's called an unauthorized biography where somebody writes about a subject without the subject's permission, where the subject doesn't have any input or editorial control over the ultimate product that goes into the book.
Right.
In this, what this was, this is the equivalent of an autobiography where it's you through your eyes in your words. That's all this was.
Right.
Now, Shannon, just for the record, I was pleasantly surprised at the objectivity that Jordan did allow. They did deal with all the gambling. Now, their conclusion wasn't exactly our conclusion. I think it did play a role in his hiatus that I believe he was forced to take to go play baseball. Mm-hmm. But at least they dealt with it, and they dealt with all the what you consider bullying, what I consider just all-time greatest leadership slash motivation in the way he rode his teammates in practice and on team planes. So at least Michael signed off on all that to the point, remember the quote from him going into the episode one was, I'm afraid people are going to think I'm a horrible person. Well, maybe some people do. I never did, but I already knew all this from the year that I covered the Last Dance
Bulls.
You
spent with it.
So in the end, this is what I believe set off Horace even more than the snitching accusation was that after maybe the first couple of episodes, Sam Smith, the author of The Jordan Rules, did a radio interview in San Francisco in which he brought up the episode that on the team plane flying back home after a loss, Jordan told the flight attendant, no, Horace doesn't eat tonight on the plane. You know, don't give him any food. Well, that's all that Sam told. Yeah, like he played so poorly that he doesn't get to eat on the flight home. Okay, so Horace is saying, here's what happened to me in this social media age. I believe that Horace went on his own social media, and I don't know, he saw six or eight people saying, Horace, you let him do that to you? No man should ever let any other man do that to him. And Horace is a proud man. And as you pointed out earlier, he's from rural Georgia where you're from. And you don't take food off a man's table. So he says the rest of the story, untold, is that he stepped right back to Michael and said, you want to do it right here? And he claims that Michael said no. And he didn't say anything. He quit barking as Horace said. Well, if I know Michael, if he had been shown on an iPad Horace saying that, or even the audio of Horace saying that on Chicago radio, I believe Michael would have thrown his head back and laughed like he did about Gary Payton saying, I shut him down in the 97 finals. So the point is, I'd like to hear Michael's side of that story now, because
right.
I don't think Michael would have backed down from Horace either. Horace was 6'10", 215, 220. Michael was 6'6", 215, 220, somewhere in that range. Maybe earlier he was more like 205-ish, maybe in those first three championship runs. But I don't believe Michael would have backed down, and I don't believe Horace would have. And thankfully, it didn't come to an all-out duke it out on the team plane. But now it's gone over the edge into horses saying he'd fight him right now. If he wants to fight, if that's the way you want to settle it, let's fight right now. No, you don't need to fight right now. You know, Michael's 57 years of age. He's let himself, but Michael's let himself go a little bit. Too many cigars, too much of you know what. And I don't want to hear that anymore, especially from a Horace Grant who now works for the NBA as an ambassador. He travels the world, pre-pandemic, obviously, to promote the Bulls and the NBA. Jerry Reinsdorf signed off on this. So I don't want to hear this from him, and I don't want to hear Horace jeopardize his job as a global ambassador, because it's not a good look for anybody.
Skip, let me tell you something. Let me tell you how it works in our community. There are three things that we don't play with: money, food, our woman. Keep those things out your mouth. We don't play with that. I don't play. Skip, they were saying there was a couple of times that Michael didn't want anybody to have the pizza. Now, this was reported that Michael spit on the pizza. That was the reason he was the only one that ate it. Now, there was another story that was reported that there were some cinnamon rolls at one point in time, and Michael didn't want to share, so he spit on those also. But you don't play with food, you don't play with money, and you don't play with a woman in our community. Now, I don't know how anybody else, I can't speak to anybody else's community. I'm telling you how it works in ours. Don't play with somebody's food. You know, because it used to be you touch somebody's food. Oh, you want that? Skip, I've seen a lot of fights happen. Somebody touch somebody's food, or some people get killed. $1, $2, and definitely a woman. So leave that alone. And when Horace Grant is like, Skip, I've gotten so many DMs on Twitter from athletes, on IG, on call. Like, man, who Michael think he is? Man, Sharp, you know good well ain't nobody gonna go for that. I'm sure Horace wasn't the only one that stood up to Michael in that situation. Now, that wasn't going to fly. So many, Skip. But the thing that Horace wanted to get, because Skip, I mean, it was portrayed that if he did this and he didn't say anything, he didn't do anything, man, the Horace is weak. Man, Horace grew up in Middle Georgia, Sparta, which is about 2 hours from where I grew up in rural South Georgia. So Horace like, Sharp, man, you know I wasn't going to let that fly.
Okay. I got it. And quickly, for the record, the community I grew up in, I think messing with woman goes to the top of the list, just for the record, just for those. I think people would understand. Yeah, could be money. I don't know. I think the woman goes to the top. But look, in the end, I can't condemn. Look, all these things that you don't like about Michael, I loved about Michael. It's like you said, everybody's dug in on you love LeBron, you love Michael. These are all the reasons that I believe Michael was so successful. Very flawed, but they all came out as positive flaws because he pulled, as he said in episode one, I pulled everybody along with me. And it wasn't always pretty, but in the end, I just can't argue with 6-0 in the finals. I'm sorry, something worked. Nobody mutinied on him. Nobody rebelled against him to the point that they wanted to quit. They all sat for the quote-unquote so-called documentary. They all spoke. They still speak highly of him. In the end, it worked out. Horace is the one guy whose pride has been rubbed rawest by this. And I hate that for Horace's sake. And I welcome the day, maybe soon, that we can have Horace on the show.
Yep. So do I, Skip.
Hope that can happen. Horace, you know, whether or not he's upset, MJ probably not losing too much sleep over it as he looks down at all those rings. I don't know if MJ's bothered by it.
No mercy.
NASCAR is back. Tonight we finish up at Darlington with the Toyota 500 live in prime time and only on FS1. And Sunday we're back on Fox for the Coca-Cola 600 live from Charlotte. Looking forward to it. So, Pro Football Focus, guys, ranked Kyler Murray as the league's sixth best deep passer last season, even despite having little help at receiver, according to Pro Football Focus. Murray also only had two turnover-worthy deep ball throws out of 62 attempts. So, Shannon, are you surprised by this?
I am, Skip, but I will be the first to say this, Skip. He played better in his rookie season than I thought he would. I thought he would struggle a little more than he did, and I thought he played well. He was rookie of the year, although I had Josh Jacobs winning that award. But to give him kudos, to give him credit. But, Skip, and I'm going to be the first to admit, it's not like I'm tuning in and watching every single play of Arizona Cardinals games. But the games that I did watch, I didn't see a whole lot of deep plays. And as Jenny was mentioning in the read, it's not like he had a whole lot of receivers that was getting down the field. Now, D-Hop will definitely make his life easier. Although D-Hop is not deep threat, Skip. He's an intermediate guy that's going to catch everything in his area code. Christian Kirk is more of the speed guy that can get down the field in a hurry. And we know what Larry Fitzgerald, he's not the Larry Fitzgerald in his first 10 years, but he's still going to catch everything you throw to him, and he can still move the sticks. And they drafted an offensive lineman, Skip, that a lot of people thought would go earlier than what he did to add protection. So yep. I think he will even be better than what he was last year, Skip. But I am surprised that he was as high as he was as far as throwing the ball deep, because I don't remember a whole lot of deep plays that stick out in my mind that he completed last year.
Shannon Sharp, I'm going to go on record right here, right now, and I'm going to tell you Kyler Murray is about to make a quantum leap in his second year, a Mahomesian Lamar-esque quantum leap in year
MVP?
Two.
MVP? Okay.
And he's...
Five cases. MVP.
No, I don't know. I don't know about MVP. No, this is... No, I just say Kyler's team is going to be a wild card team. I wouldn't be shocked if Kyler's team wins the West this year, because I find their schedule eminently easy. And I don't want to waste your time going all the way down the schedule, but trust me, if they get hot like I think they might, they could win 11 or 12 games. I'm not going to predict that, but I say they could win 10 and win the wild card, at least be the second best team in the division and go to the playoffs in Kyler's second year. I wasn't surprised by sixth best deep passing stats or by what Jenny just read, only two turnover-worthy throws in 62 deep passes. It's what he did for my Oklahoma Sooners. This little man has a big arm. I told you, this is a special little athlete who has a supreme self-confidence that manifests itself in almost an athletic arrogance that he plays with. A poise, a pride, a quiet self-belief that is captivating and contagious. And I believe you're going to see it really start to pay dividends now that he actually has a bona fide top five receiver he can rely on. Larry Fitz, we all know, is starting to get to the end of the line. I'm a little surprised he's going to come back again. And then I look down the rest. I like Christian Kirk, and I really liked Andy Isabella coming out in the draft. And I don't know what happened. He only caught 9 balls last year. He was their second-round pick a year ago out of UMass. He ran 4.3 at the combine. I say they'll get him more involved this year, and that will help open up this offense. So in the end, with Kenyon Drake, you can hand it to him or flip it to him. He can really catch it and run with it. I love what they're going to be able to do in year two with Kyler, because I kept defending Kyler's year one. He tied the Lions on opening day. That's pretty great, given what Arizona, you know, they were the worst team the year before. And then he beat Atlanta. And he won at the Giants. These are impressive. He beat the Browns at home, and then he won at the Seahawks. Twice last year, he gave the 49ers all they wanted. Two close games. He gave the Ravens all they wanted in a narrow loss at Baltimore. So you look at the body of work from last year. He was 16th in the league in QBR in the middle of the pack. That's pretty good for a rookie. And if you look at catchable passes, Pro Football Focus says he ranked 10th. And that's above Russell Wilson and Deshaun and Baker and Mahomes and Drew Brees and Lamar. He threw more catchable passes. In air distance, he was 11th last year, so there was no dinking and dunking from little Kyler, who a lot of people thought was just too little to play pro football. He threw more deep passes than Mahomes did or Deshaun did. So I loved what I saw under Cliff Kingsbury last year, and then I jumped out of my chair when, with the 8th overall pick, they took the guy I liked the best on defense, Isaiah Simmons from Clemson. That's the guy who kept leaping off my TV when I watched the Clemson Tigers play. I saw more flash from Isaiah Simmons than I saw from Chase Young. Again, it wouldn't surprise me if Isaiah is going to have more early impact than even Chase Young does. And you mentioned Josh Jones. Mel Kiper believed they stole him in the third round as a plug-and-play offensive starter at tackle. So that'll work. That'll help shore up the protection. Well, I want to see Kyler run with it more because he's just a little lightning bug. He is hard to get on the ground, and he never seems to take a tough shot. Yeah.
I'm going to need you to do something for me. Now, you just said, before you got through all that little spiel of yours, you said the Cardinals could win 10 or 11 games, but you're not going to predict it. Like you tell me, I'm going to need you to have the courage of your conviction. Are they going to win 10 or 11 games? Yes or no, or are you willing to put due on it?
10 games, I said. I'm not going to go to 11 or 12, even though I could see them winning 11 or 12 when I look at the schedule. I'll go 10.
Can I get some due?
But, again.
Can I get some due?
Well, sure. Yeah, well, what do I get back if I win? The odds on that should be like 20-1 that they would win 10 games. Nobody expects them to win 10. I'll bet you one case to 20 that they win 10 games.
No.
Will you take that?
No. Skip.
Will you put your due where your mouth is?
You skip. We have hood bets. We don't do the odds. We don't do no odds. We bet in the hood. You take that team straight up. That's how we do it, Skip. You know how we do. We bet win, loss. That's what we do. Now all of a sudden, see, that's how you got to that 30 plus case lead on me, by me giving you odds. I'm not giving you any odds. You got 10 wins. We got two cases. They don't win 10 games.
Who is out on the limb I'm out on right now, 10 games for Kyler Murray? Who's out there? Me, by myself.
That's me.
I'll give you
out there on the limb.
I'll give you a break. I'll give you 10-1 odds. I'll cut them in half. I'll do 10 cases versus one case on 10 wins.
Nope.
That's a sucker deal. Come on, take it, Shannon.
No, it is. If I were to take this deal, it'd be a sucker.
No.
But you're right. You're on the limb by yourself. But I'm up in that tree behind you. I'm sawing. I'm gonna saw that limb right on off when you talk about 10 wins. Cause that's what's happening. No mercy.